It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
the American Civil Liberties Union is the guardian of our liberty, and it has been, and I'm afraid it always will be. Most of the time you look at a not-for-profit organization and ask yourself if you have a vision of a day when you won't be needed anymore. And I think that the American Civil Liberties Union is one of those unique organizations that will always have an important role to play protecting the rights of minorities and making sure that all of us share equally the rights of freedom of association and freedom of speech, which are so important, and freedom of religion, which are so important to our American way of life. I think that we have some real challenges, as illustrated by the most recent General Assembly session, in not falling backwards in our protection of basic human rights to privacy, to freedom of choice, and also basic human rights to be treated equally based on your merit and not on who you are. We are struggling in Virginia now to come to terms with the reality that a majority of Virginians believe that gay people shouldn't be discriminated against in the workplace, yet we have a legislature and a legal system right now that doesn't afford equal protections to everyone. That's obviously going to be one of our principal challenges in the next decade as it becomes increasingly obvious that legislative change may be difficult to come by.
Claire Gastaniaga, the incoming executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Virginia, talks about the civil liberties challenges facing Virginians. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn about the Social Security Administration's large and growing surplus, exploding the myth that the system is going broke. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 167, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Last month, the Social Security trustees released their annual report, and it showed that Social Security has a large and growing surplus. At the end of 2011, the system had a surplus of $2.7 trillion, which will grow to $2.8 trillion by the end of 2012. Social Security now provides benefits to 56 million Americans, but serves all Americans of all ages by guaranteeing that everyone currently working can count on retiring in dignity. Average Social Security benefits are actually modest at about only $14,000 per year, which is more than half of the income for a typical senior and more than 90% of the income for a quarter of retirees. In fact, Social Security is a lifeline that helps millions of Americans stay out of poverty. By law, Social Security cannot add a penny to the deficit, and it never has. To keep Social Security going strong into the next century and without cutting promised benefits, all we need is a simple adjustment to that system. Have every worker all pay the same rate. Over 70% of Americans support such proposals to raise the cap on Social Security wages. Right now, workers earning a middle-class income set aside 6% of their income for Social Security, while those making $1 million per year pay less than 1%. In other news, on May 7, 2012, 44 states, including Virginia and the District of Columbia, announced a $100 million settlement with Abbott Laboratories for illegal off-label marketing of its drug Depakote. This agreement marks the largest consumer protection-based pharmaceutical settlement ever reached. Depakote is approved for treatment of seizure disorders, mania associated with bipolar disorder, and prophylaxis of migraines. However, the state attorneys general alleged Abbott marketed the drug for unapproved uses, including treatment of schizophrenia, agitated dementia, and autism. Under the terms of the settlement, the Commonwealth of Virginia will receive more than $2 million. Funds received in this settlement will help fund future consumer protection enforcement matters. Abbott Laboratories, based in Illinois, will be restricted from marketing the drug for off-label uses not approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Under the settlement, Abbott Laboratories is prohibited from making false or misleading claims about Depakote, prohibited from promoting Depakote for off-label uses, and required to ensure financial incentives on sales do not promote off-label uses of Depakote. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Daughtry versus Ash. In October 1985, Hayes Daughtry purchased a diamond bracelet for his wife from Sidney Ash, a jeweler, who represented that the diamonds were of VVS grade, which is a very high quality grade. However, the buyer later discovered that the diamonds were of much lower value and sued the jeweler. The City of Norfolk Circuit Court found the buyer had not proven that the appraisal was a term or condition of the sale, nor a warranty, and denied relief. However, on appeal, the Supreme Court of Virginia found that the seller's description of the diamonds was more than his opinion, but was a statement of a fact. Therefore, the description was an express warranty under the Uniform Commercial Code, and the affirmation of the diamond's quality was a part of the basis of the bargain. Due to this, the buyer was entitled to recover for his loss of bargain. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and Daughtry versus Ash is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the offices of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society, and we are speaking with Claire Gastanaga. She is a former Chief Deputy Attorney General for the state of Virginia. For the past 10 years, she has been doing policy advocacy on immigration, gay rights, sexual and domestic violence, and other progressive causes. And a week from Friday, June the 1st, she will become the new Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Virginia. Welcome back to the show, Claire.
Oh, thank you very much, Marty. Glad to be here.
Now, you are replacing a living legend, Kent Willis, who has been the Executive Director of the ACLU of Virginia for more than 20 years. How do you go about even preparing yourself to do that?
Obviously, there are really big shoes to fill there, but the good news is that Kent is an incredibly generous person and someone whom I plan to think of as my executive director emeritus. He won't be going too far, and he's promised to be there whenever I call him. So I feel very comfortable taking on this responsibility, knowing that he's there to guide me and to stand behind me, and at the same time, I'm ready to take on the opportunity myself.
And what do you see as the civil liberties issues that are on the horizon that are going to be taking up your time in the next several months and possibly next several years?
The American Civil Liberties Union is the guardian of our liberty, and it has been, and I'm afraid it always will be. Most of the time you look at a not-for-profit organization and ask yourself if you have a vision of a day when you won't be needed anymore, and I think that the American Civil Liberties Union is one of those unique organizations that will always have an important role to play protecting the rights of minorities and making sure that all of us share equally the rights of freedom of association and freedom of speech, which are so important, and freedom of religion, which are so important to our American way of life. I think that we have some real challenges, as illustrated by the most recent General Assembly session, in not falling backwards in our protection of basic human rights to privacy, to freedom of choice, and also basic human rights to be treated equally based on your merit and not on who you are. We are struggling in Virginia now to come to terms with the reality that a majority of Virginians believe that gay people shouldn't be discriminated against in the workplace, yet we have a legislature and a legal system right now that doesn't afford equal protections to everyone. That's obviously going to be one of our principal challenges in the next decade, as it becomes increasingly obvious that legislative change may be difficult to come by.
And another issue that, of course, you've advocated on is immigration, and it seems that every General Assembly session there are a host of bills that are introduced, and they make some headway and some pass even, that have very dire consequences to people who are here both legally and not legally, at least not documented legally, who are not citizens. What do you see as the issues there?
Even one of the key proponents of what are clearly anti-immigrant pieces of legislation, Dave Albo, said the other day that Virginia is behind no one when it comes to the aggressiveness with which the General Assembly has established laws that apply directly to people based on their immigration status. I mean, we have more than 50 laws on the books that directly limit or circumscribe the rights and obligations and responsibilities of people who are here in the country, even legally, as immigrants. We've had a law in the books since the 30s that said if you are admitted to a mental health facility in Virginia and you are not an American citizen or a permanent legal resident, your status is to be reported to the immigration authorities. And we were one of the first states to bar persons from getting driver's license unless they could prove legal presence, one of the first states to say that state benefits could be conditioned on showing legal presence, one of the first states to have a law that says that everybody who is arrested and taken into custody will have their immigration status checked. So, you know, Virginia has gone very far down the path and, in fact, has led Arizona and some of the other states that have gotten more publicity in enacting some of these laws. And it's had a discernible adverse impact on the community. It has pushed people further into the shadows, made them more vulnerable to criminal acts. I think the recent case involving the arrest and soon-to-be prosecution of this ring of fake ID sellers that were acting with such violence here in Central Virginia and in other states is evidence of the magnitude of the problem in some respects, because it shows both the desperation of people seeking simply to be able to work and to take care of their families and the viciousness of the attitude of the people who are willing to exploit them and use them for their own purposes.
Now, an issue that you alluded to earlier had to do with a woman's right to choose. Obviously, Virginia was, to some extent, the butt of some of the late-night comics with the transvaginal ultrasound that ultimately didn't get into the final legislation, but there was plenty of other restrictions on a woman's right to choose that did get into the final legislation. What do you see the future of that being?
Well, I think people need to understand that what was proposed was basically a law that mandated sexual object penetration of women by a doctor against her will, which, you know, in any other circumstance is clearly a felony. The bill that actually passed still mandates a battery of a woman. In other words, an unconsented touching is an actionable civil and criminal offense against any person. And even the abdominal jelly on the belly ultrasound without consent is a criminal battery, in my view. The Oklahoma Supreme Court and some other courts have taken a look at some of these initiatives and have raised serious questions about their constitutionality. And I think that's something obviously we'll need to keep looking at and be vigilant about. It is a fact that the purpose here is to develop so many barriers to a woman's ability to seek a legal abortion that they won't be available anymore. And it's a backdoor way of accomplishing an objective that can't be accomplished directly. And it's something that we need to continue to find strategies to limit and to change. Women should be angry about the cavalierness of the legislative decision making. I mean, one of the other pieces of that ultrasound legislation that people haven't really focused on is that it mandates that a record of the ultrasound be kept in your medical record for 7 years. And one of the things that Virginians don't understand is that your medical record is, in fact, not your medical record. It belongs to a doctor. And you only have a right to a copy. And you have very limited control on where that record goes. And yet you've now been required to get a procedure that you didn't want, and then to have that procedure documented in a file that you have no control over for 7 years. That seems to me to be a true governmental invasion of privacy in its most, in starkest sense.
And yet, do you find it ironic that some of the same people who are advocating these procedures against someone's will are the same folks who are complaining about the, quote, individual mandate in the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act?
That contradiction has not been lost on most of us who have been following these issues. I think that, it's Stephen Carter in a book, Integrity, said one of the only ways that you can judge institutional integrity is by the consistency of people's actions. And in that circumstance, it's quite clear that the individuals who don't see those contradictions in their arguments clearly raise questions about the integrity of their principle.
Well, and I guess another issue that raises possible integrity issues is the recent voter ID bills trying essentially to be a solution in search of a problem. What do you see as the issue there?
Well, I actually represented the Democratic Party and some other folks back in 2005 in a challenge to the first foray in this direction, which was the effort to try to do this as a pilot program. And we were able to use the state constitution, which says we have to have a uniform system of voting, to get a judge to say you couldn't do this piecemeal, which meant that it was put off for some time. Since that time, the legislature has been incrementally seeking to impose, ID requirements in a circumstance in which there hasn't been any evidence of voter fraud. There, the recent cases that have been cited have to do with voter registration and not what happens at the polls. So the question is the value of these requirements, i.e. the preventative value to prevent something that's not happening, which is voter fraud at the polls, does that in some way balance against the downside? And I think the answer to that's clearly no. The downside here is that there are any number of people who were born at home, who don't have birth certificates, who don't drive and don't have driver's licenses, who don't have the money to pay to get an ID that would work. And all of those people are going to be clearly discouraged from voting. It's going to be made difficult. The requirement that we now have is that, if you don't have an ID, you sign something under penalty of perjury, which is a felony, that you are who you are and you're permitted to vote. The way the law is changing, you might be able to cast a provisional ballot, but you still have to come in and prove your identity with a document that you don't have. I think the purpose is clearly one that fits in with Virginia's long history of seeking to put barriers in the way of people wanting to vote, particularly African Americans and poor people. One of the things that people don't understand about our history is that part of the reason why Virginia did not approve women's suffrage when the constitutional amendment was before us was the fear that it would create a whole host of new voters out of black women. And so, our legislature didn't approve the amendment that went into effect in the 20s until the 50s. So we've had a long history of erecting barriers to voting, and this is another one in what I consider to be a dark part of our history as opposed to a light part of our history.
And finally, what do you see as the issues that have I guess, traditionally been the ACLU's possibly main issue, free speech and free press and freedom of religion. What's happening there? What do you see the challenges and the dangers?
Well, I'm, you know, so proud that the ACLU approaches all of these things from a place of real pure principle and has defended the right of teenagers to post the Ten Commandments in their lockers at school, as well as raised questions about whether, you know, localities have created public forums that should be open to everyone, including, you know, flying flags that not everybody approves of. These are important matters of principle, and it is a hallmark of the ACLU's role as a guardian of liberty that it has, and under Kent's leadership, this has just been so well understood and respected, that it has, without reference to content or position, protected the right of each individual Virginian to practice their religion the way that they want to in private, and also to be able to speak freely when they are in a public setting or in a public forum.
And finally, how can people learn more about the American Civil Liberties Union of Virginia?
Well, the American Civil Liberties Union of Virginia has a very good website with lots of good information. It's acluva.org. And you can find all kinds of information about our mission, our vision, what we stand for, who our leadership is, and also very specific information on issues of concern. It also includes copies of legal briefs we've filed and press releases, and it is a very robust and content-rich place for you to go to find basic information.
Well, thank you so much. We have been speaking with Claire Gastanaga. She's formerly a Chief Deputy Attorney General of the state of Virginia, has been a policy advocate for the past 10 years for progressive causes, and a week from Friday, June the 1st, she will become the new Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Virginia. Thank you so much for being on the show.
And thank you, Marty. I really enjoyed it.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 57, which deals with religious and charitable matters and cemeteries. This title not only deals with churches, but also with charitable groups such as the Freemasons, the Odd Fellows, the Sons of Temperance, the Elks, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the American Legions, and the Disabled American Veterans. Under Code of Virginia, Section 57-20, such charitable organizations cannot hold, at one time, more than 5 acres of land, except the Elks, who may hold 35 acres, and the Veterans of Foreign Wars, American Legions, Disabled American Veterans, or other veterans association, who may hold 75 acres, which is 15 times as much land. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. You can get free legal information at the statewide legal aid website. This is www.valegalaid.org. You also may get free pre-recorded legal information by phone during non-business hours. These are before 9 a.m., after 5 p.m., and on weekends and legal holidays. Call toll-free 1-866-534-5243. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Can you put a GPS on your spouse's car to prove infidelity? Can you use that Facebook page in a custody case? Can these flirtatious emails be used against you? Join us next week when private attorney Larry Deal reveals the fascinating and unexpected implications when high technology meets the world of family law in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on November 3, 2010. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.